Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
And welcome to Lost in the Static.
Porno. I want cheap porno. Where do I get cheap porno?
Well, adamandeve.com, where if you use the promo code STATIC, you can, in fact, get 50% off of any single item, not just the cheap porno that you're talking about. In addition to that, you also get 3 free DVDs, so there's 3 more free pornos.
That's not even cheap, that's free.
That's right, that's beyond cheap. And then, if you're in the U.S., you get free U.S. shipping.
Again, not even cheap, free.
Free, exactly. And you get a free mystery gift that could be yet another porno. So for the price of one half of a porno, you can get 4 possibly, at least 4, because you get the 3 free DVDs and the one you ordered, and you could end up with 5.
But that you don't necessarily have to order a porno. You can order something that would be used in a porno.
You can order anything from a skimpy negligee for your wife or yourself, I don't judge, all the way to
porno.
Exactly. So anyway, there we go. This week, Josh, we are going to
this week I'm going to be asking stupid questions that are probably going to infuriate you.
That's right. And we are going to talk about the glorious PC Master Race.
I didn't think we were going to get into them right away, but...
Well, no, but we will mention them. We're going to be talking about PC gaming, which has been around longer even than consoles, obviously.
And obviously grew up as an adjunct to the consoles. You know, as the last 3 episodes proved, we went through the console wars. And now, just side by side, running parallel to the console wars, was the PC revolution the entire time. Sometimes pushing the console wars, sometimes being a direct competitor.
I was going to say more recently, PC gaming, at least from about 2000, the first 10 years of the 2000s, it kind of took a back seat to the consoles, because
now, coming at this from an outsider's perspective, you know, not being a PC gamer like you were in the 80s and whatnot, I always saw in the Atari era, the Sega era, the Nintendo era, the SNES era, even the PlayStation 1 era, PC gaming had better graphics, better sound, and was arguably superior to console gaming. Nowadays, I'd say they're right neck and neck. I don't think PC has the edge it used to have. I think the consoles really caught up.
No, you're right. They caught up to a good portion. However, I can tell you that I think PCs still have an edge. In most games, your PC graphics are going to be better, noticeably, not glaringly, but noticeably better than a lot of console games. And that has to do with the resolution of monitors versus TVs these days. That has to do with
sometimes that's an issue straight out. Like, have you ever seen any of those old 3D movies that they put out on DVD now with the glasses, like Friday the 13th Part 3 or anything like that?
They don't look nearly as good, and they don't come across nearly as well.
The 3D doesn't work on a TV.
Right.
But it does on a computer monitor.
Right.
Why that is, I don't know. It's just some difference between the computer monitor and the television.
It all it boils down basically to resolution and being able to keep up and scanning and stuff like that. Now, TVs are kind of catching up with HD TV. They're catching up with computer monitors. But for the most part, for most of the time, I'm looking at the 2 PC monitors that I have right here for the battle station. You're going to get cleaner looks here because they scan faster and they run a little bit faster than upstairs. I've noticed it even on movies that I'm watching that are on Blu-ray. Motion will come across a whole lot cleaner here than on my admittedly, it's an older 720 TV, but simply because of the scanning rate, it will come across cleaner on computer monitors. And that's what happened with your TV. By the way, if you hear a slight buzzing in the background, we have a heater running.
We're in Wisconsin. We are still in the fucking ice age.
Yeah, it's well below zero, and I have a little heater running, so I apologize if you hear a little buzz in the background, but it's necessary. Otherwise, we'd be doing the whole show like this.
Pretty much. But I got something else to say about the monitor versus the TV thing. But sometimes, Scott, that doesn't go the opposite direction. I've tried playing like a 16-bit, say, a Sonic game from the Genesis through a computer monitor. It's all pixelized and blocky. I put it on my TV, and it looks just fine. For some reason, the monitors can't handle the lower resolution graphics as well at the same resolution.
Well, they handle them just fine. It's just that they come across a lot crisper and a lot cleaner versus watching it, especially if you play an older game on a tube TV, it's just going to come across a little bit fuzzier. And so
it comes
knowing
across
that,
less pixelized yeah, and more knowing, smoothed over.
Knowing that, they made it, you know, less pixelized on the, or I'm sorry, they made it less clean with lower resolution on those games, and it comes across cleaner, especially on like if you're playing something like a Sega Genesis game, the old Sonic game, on a non-HD TV, especially an old tube TV or something like that, it's going to come across a lot cleaner than if you're, or not necessarily cleaner, but
smoother.
less sharp than if you're playing it on a computer monitor or something. And that's just, that's, again, it's down to technical specs, but that's not why we're talking.
Right.
All right. Here's a quick quiz for you. What is the first PC game that you remember? Not necessarily being played, not necessarily you playing, but being exposed to or hearing about.
It would, I the title would escape me. Maybe Wizardry. It'd be some D&D-ish kind of vector graphics style on an old Apple II with the, you know, where you're first personing through like a dungeon or some shit like that. Maybe Wizardry.
Okay.
I don't know if that's the title. I mean, I know that's a game, but I don't know if it's was that specific
game. One.
But some D&D first person dungeon crawl.
Okay, so by the way, that wouldn't be vector graphics, not on an Apple II, but
I'm also looking at 40 years of fucking memory here.
Yeah,
so,
but it had that wireframe look and the way it is, and I can kind of see where you're coming from. Now, when do you think computer games started? Give me at least a decade.
Oh, the computer games, you know, Space War, you know, would be the first one. Or there was that little oscillator one that actually was credited as the first video game, but I can't remember the name of it.
And that one, I know Tennis for Two is what it was called.
Yeah, okay. And it was just something on like an oscillator screen or some shit.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. It was a hacked... not oscillator, oscilloscope.
Oscilloscope. Something with a fucking O.
I know. It was a hacked oscilloscope that a guy put together, and that's... Some people call that the first computer game. Some people go, well, it's an oscilloscope, not really a computer. The one that they call the first computer game was actually in 1950... I want to say one... I'm going to check my page here. Thank you for not looking at that and cheating, by the way, when I asked. 1952.
Okay.
And it was a version of tic-tac-toe. And this, of course, was in the old room-filling computers. And
all I'm thinking of, do you want to play a game?
And that, believe it or not, that was a lot of people's impression and first...
War games?
Exposure to, like, large, you know, PC games... They'd been around for a while, but you look at war games and you kind of have to laugh because you're like, all right, okay. But yeah, that's in the reason the computer in war games, Whopper, ended up learning what he needed to learn via tic-tac-toe.
Technically Joshua.
Well, yeah, technically Joshua, but was because of EDSAC, the old room-filling computer that somebody went, I can make a tic-tac-toe game on this. And Whopper was playing. Now, the one that you mentioned earlier, Space War, that was 19...
I think that was 60s. Or I think that was early 60s, I think.
It's an MIT student. It was early 60s, and it was kind of a proof of concept of... I don't think it really hit
anywhere. It was never released in the market. It was just at the college, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Just to kind of go... See, we can do this.
Yeah, and it was the first coin operated thing because they put the program together and ended up wiring it up to a coin slot and putting it into a really goofy looking arcade cabinet.
Oh, it was a 60s looking arcade cabinet. Oh, yeah. I'll fucking tell you,
beautiful blobby plastic.
It looked like it could have fit in 2001: A Space Odyssey with no problem.
Exactly, and they threw it into the cafeteria and made a shit ton of money from people playing it. They went, oh, we can do this. Now, a lot of people that are listening to this show, I'm sure, got their first exposure to PC gaming maybe at school, like I did. I had a PC at home, but it was largely a dad toy, and the first time I really got to play with a PC was on an old Trash 80, the Radio Shack TRS-80s. And we had a copy of a game that came out of Minnesota and got shipped to schools all over the place before they decided to make it a commercial thing. And that was Oregon Trail.
Which I've never played. I mean, I know of its history. I know it's a meme now. I played Oregon Trail. I got dysentery. You know, that's a fucking meme on the internet. I've seen t-shirts. I think you have a t-shirt.
I have that, a t-shirt actually. Yeah. You have died of dysentery.
I seem to remember you wearing that once, but I never played it.
It really, honestly, was a decent little game, surprisingly engaging because, you know, you were managing funds, you were hunting, you were trying to get from, I believe it was New York or somewhere out east to Oregon, and it's not a bad game, and it's gone through tons of iterations. It's funny, Oregon Trail has been with us as long as PC gaming has been with us because it started life through the Minnesota Education Computing Consortium. And it started life in 1974. It's a year older than us.
Yep. Because, see, when I think of PC games, even before what we'll call the heyday, which would you might argue with me, but I would say for commercial PC gaming would be the 90s, I remember seeing the ads in all the old sci-fi magazines and in Omni and stuff like that. And if you thought, like, the cover art on an Atari cartridge oversold those blocky graphics and limited gameplay... The PC games did the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
They had these epic Buck Rogers looking bad. I mean, they would hire some, like, Hildebrand artist to make this giant fucking painting, and you'd go, yeah, the game is a stick figure walking through a wireframe. This is not what I was advertised.
Yeah, exactly. But real quick on Oregon Trail, it entered schools in 1981.
Okay.
About the same time you and I did, a little bit after us, actually, on the Apple II. It's been on the Apple II, the Macintosh, DOS, Windows, in 5 iterations, the Nintendo DS, the Wii, the 3DS, iOS, Android, modern PCs, and Windows Phone.
Okay.
I am thoroughly convinced that so long as we have some sort of gaming apparatus, we are going to have some sort of version of Oregon Trail.
Okay, and I'll still probably never play it. I don't have any, like, ugh, get that away from me. I just don't have any interest.
I actually, we may have to sit down and have you give it a try. It's not a bad game. Some of the modern iterations are a little goofy as hell, but the original... actual economic game, and that's at the heart of it, that's what it was, whether you're talking about the economics of food or the economics of supplies or the economics of cash, it was basically an economic management game is what it was. And it sounds boring as hell, but trust me, it was fun. But you were talking about overselling. The one that comes to mind for me for overselling was a game I got in about mid-1980s, I'm going to say. And this was when I had my Apple IIe. And one of the first games that I picked up for it was Castle Wolfenstein. Now, not Wolfenstein 3D, not the first-person right. shooter, not that one, but the original Castle Wolfenstein, which was basically a top-down.
Yeah.
And you went through a maze and did all the stuff that you did in Wolfenstein 3D. It
was different perspective.
Different perspective and a little bit different. And that was little more than stick figures running through a maze.
Well, look at the Ultima games. Look at the early ones. The graphics are fucking horrendous, technically, even for the time, because if you look at some of their competitors at the time, their graphics were well below par. And I think that was partially due to how big the game was. It was, well, we can use this space for more gameplay or more graphics. What should we do? How about like a 20-hour gameplay back in the 80s, you know? That kind of shit. So, but to me, the thing about that era, you know, we're sticking with the early era, is they seemed to go through the same problem that the consoles were having. Oversaturation. Because I remember going into a computer store, say 86, and there were just walls and walls of all these games for the computer. And they all had that beautiful cover art that probably cost a ton. And it's like, you know, the guy behind the counter was like, you're going to beat the whole game in an hour. It's not worth your $70. You know?
Yeah, I mean, there were those games that were out there. And then so long as there, I mean, even for consoles, there have been short games that are not worth your time.
Terminator Salvation, fucking 4 hours on normal to beat the game. Yeah, that's worth $60.
Well, let's take the most recent example I found, Rambo the video game.
I haven't played the new one. I've seen the trailer for it.
Don't.
I've seen the trailer and that's it.
Don't play it. It's a rail shooter.
Pretty much.
It's not even first-person perspective. It's a rail shooter. They're charging $30 for it. And looking at friends, it can be finished in about 2 hours.
Well, I got a question for you about PC. What about when everything had kind of a PC iteration, or it became so easy by the late 90s that even a shitty throw out there could put one out? You brought up Rail Shooter. It made me think of this. Iron Maiden, the band. When they put out one of their greatest hits, you know, they do them every year, seemingly, one of their greatest hits compilations, it was a 3-CD set. 2 CDs of music and a CD with a PC game that used the Iron Maiden Eddie character in a rail shooter with Iron Maiden music playing in the background. And it was crappy and stupid and pointless, but it was like, why? The world needed a crappy Iron Maiden game for you to just give away with the... with the greatest hits set?
Well, did the world need Revolution X?
Was that the Aerosmith one?
Yes, it was.
No.
You know, technically, does the world need any game? No.
You know what I mean.
But
I mean, like...
Why not?
You know, like, there's those Burger King games, and Nickelodeon has all those games on their websites. I don't know if you consider that PC gaming or not.
Web games. You know? That's a little bit different. But, you know... I think the question is, why not? And those Burger King games, if I remember right, I forget which one. I think it may have been Sneak King, or maybe it was the bumper one, the bumper car one.
The one that was a glaring Mario Kart knockoff?
Well, no, it wasn't even... It was nothing like Mario Kart. Where did you hear Mario Kart knockoff?
The commercial. When I saw the commercial, that's what it looked like to me.
No, it wasn't anything like Mario Kart. But one of them got pretty decent reviews. I forget which one it was. They put out 3. But, you know, it's why not? If it's a way to sell your product and it's easy to put together a game. And on the web, it's with Flash programming and stuff like that. Usually when people start programming those languages, that's what they start with, is a game. And it can be as simple as go over and get the red dot and put the red dot in the blue box.
Adventure from a fucking Atari.
Well, Adventure from Atari. That was
as simplistic as you could fucking get.
But it was a good game. It wasn't a bad game at all. And the complexity does not always equal good game. And my God, that's true on PC. Look, one of my favorite games, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, text adventure.
And see, I never got into the text adventure ones. I get the point of it, but I want to play. I don't want to just constantly read and then type. Go left, go right, pick up candle. You know, it's like, come on.
Well, you know, look at the era that it came out in. That was the best you could do sometimes. And you want to talk about length of gameplay? Your text adventures guarantee that. And I'm actually surprised. Someone that reads as much as you do,
but not when doesn't play. I don't want to do that when I play a game. You know, to me, it's a different experience. When I'm reading a book, that's not the same as playing a game. When I'm playing a game, I want to engage in it. That's like, and PC is just as guilty as this as consoles. That's why it's like, even when I put in a new game, some brand new game that just came out, and they've got that 15-minute opening thing, setting up everything, and it's like, just let me play. For some reason, in my brain, if it were a movie, I'd be fine. But in a game, I'm going, I'm holding a controller. Let me play. Yeah. Shut up and quit talking to me.
I understand that. No, and me, why not?
You know, to me, like I said, the way I remember PC is the 90s, when the graphics were going, we're better than Sega, we're better than the SNES, we're better than the Atari 64, the Atari Jaguar, the Atari 64.
The Atari 64.
The Atari 64. Yeah, I just kind of mooshed that.
With the new game Tempest Mario 2000 cart.
Well, they were saying 64 bits, so yeah, I mean, it's still technically. But yeah, in that era, they also went to do something that, I'm not saying the consoles couldn't do it, but the Sega CD proved they couldn't do it well. And that was, they were actually able to show video.
Yes.
Yes, it was interlaced. It was in a tiny box. I mean, QuickTime rarely worked then. I think it was early Privateer, in which, you know, everything I've ever heard about the early Wing Commander games that used FMVs were, the QuickTime player crashed constantly.
That's why people didn't use QuickTime most of the time.
You know, that it was the video would be halfway through playing and it would just crash.
It depended. It took a lot of PC resources. So it took a powerhouse at the time. And that's something that hasn't changed in PC gaming. If you want to talk about a top of the line PC, go into a computer store and say, I want a gaming rig. Or I want a simulation rig, you know, which is why I put together the PC that I did and why I've got two video cards and, you know, stuff like that and why it's such. Plus, I think about venturing out onto YouTube and doing some stuff. And for that, I'm going to have to record gameplay and stuff like that. So I have to have a powerful PC. And that's what has set PC apart from consoles, is one, you have a much larger initial investment. Two, you've got the freedom of upgrading, and maybe if you're not as worried about graphic performance and stuff like that, you can go a little bit cheaper there. But as you go through, you can upgrade your PC. PCs had savability. You could save a game on a PC much earlier than you ever could on a console. And nowadays it's exactly the same.
And see, again, not being a PC gamer, I look at that as somewhat of a deficit, though. That, okay, I can buy a PS3 for X amount of dollars or spend three times that to play the same general games on a computer. Then there is, and I know this is not an issue anymore, but in the 80s, there was the control issue. I remember, yes, you could buy controllers. You couldn't buy like a D-pad or like an NES-type controller.
Sure you could.
I never ran across those. I've tried playing games with the fucking arrow keys and hit space, space bar to shoot. And I'm like, this is stupid. Why, you know, this is not laid out for my hands.
But then I also, I look at console games and depending on the type of, for instance, Command and Conquer, who has, what is it? Xbox port, I think. Playing real-time strategy or something like Civilization or Command and Conquer or something like that on a console infuriates me.
It depends on how they do it. Halo Wars and Dune 2, well, it's Dune on the console, but Dune 2 on the PC, it's the same game. They actually simplified it for the, you know, fewer buttons.
Yes, they simplified it.
But you get the same effect, and it does work the same. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't think an RTS would translate as well as these did.
But those, again, are exceptions that prove the rule, in my opinion. Because I depending on the type of game that I'm playing, I definitely want the PC game experience in many. If I'm, let's, one of the games that I've been playing quite a bit on the PC, Dust. And Elysian Tale. It's a nice little indie game.
Controls sci-fi-y.
It's closer to like the Roaming Samurai.
Okay.
But it's a decent little game. It's fun. I am going to go out and I have wireless Xbox controllers, but I don't want to invest in the receiver down here and trying to pair them with my Xbox and my PC at the same time. Okay. or vice. So I'm just going to go out and I'm going to get a regular wired Xbox controller that I can plug into the PC and it works.
I've got a PS2 one that I plug into the PC to play, but, like MAMES.
You know, like games like that, yes, it's a controller. It's great. I love it. It's a decent story. It's decent graphics and it's a lot of fun, but it does take a controller to truly... You know, mouse and keyboard aren't bad. But at the same time, again, depending on the game,
I also think it depends on the person, because it depends on. Let's the example I'm going to give is something that's both on PC and on Xbox. Okay, like Halo. When I don't know about the other games, when they re-released Halo for its anniversary, they released it on PC as well because my son has it. Now I've always played Halo games on the Xbox. Obviously, my son says it took him a while to get used to playing it with a mouse and keyboard, but then after that it actually controlled better, he thought. And I tried and I'm like, this is just, it's almost like it's alien. It's like my hands and my brain can't work because I keep going, I should be holding an Xbox controller. This doesn't feel right.
Well, last week you came here a little bit early, last time we recorded, and you sat down and you played the Stanley Parable.
Right. And for people that don't know, I kept doing the opposite of what the narrator instructed, and he was getting pissed at me.
You want to know something funny about you, though? I mean, this is a game that's all about making choices, and all you ever did was the opposite, and you kept running through the same playthrough again and again and again because you kept making the same choices just to piss off the narrator.
He's not going to tell me what to do.
Insanity. But that's what I'm saying, was you miss the entire point of the game of making choices because you refuse to make any other choices. My point is, you sat down and you played a first person, what is?
Explorer.
Given there is no shooting, but it's basically a first person shooter type control. First person explorer. Yeah. And it was funny. It was like, it was kind of like watching somebody who they just pulled off the street and brought them in and said, here, perform heart surgery. And you were like, okay, so this kind of does this. And
but
this
if you'd
goes
given me an
way.
Xbox controller, I could have, it would have been much more intuitive.
And I can tell
I
you,
could have flowed it so much
and
better.
And I can tell you from playing Bioshock and Bioshock Infinite, both on PC and Xbox, oh my God, do I miss my mouse and keyboard when I'm upstairs. For the simple reason that I get to use two hands, have a lot more buttons to do a whole lot more, and I can swing a mouse around and look around and shoot and do stuff like that faster than holding down that control stick and going, okay, we're waiting for it to get around. Okay, there's my target. All right, my reticle is aimed. All right, boom. Versus swing, bam, you know.
Well, and see, that's a problem with the game because, like, you know, like in a Halo game, you can swing around with no problem. It's, you know... It doesn't take long.
But then, I think we've kind of gotten off track because we're talking about talking about PC gaming.
Yeah.
But one thing that I liked about PC gaming that was much easier to do and much cheaper to do than consoles, and this was even back in the glory days, as you put it, was shareware.
Right. And is that the same as like the mods or is
no.
it? Okay.
Okay. Shareware was I'm Epic Mega Games.
Okay.
I forget who published the original Duke Nukem. I think it was Epic Mega Games.
No idea.
Either them or one of their competitors. Anyway, I'm going to make this adventure and it will have six episodes, so to speak, or six
levels.
Games. No, not levels. Six games that maybe they're 10, 12 levels apiece.
Okay.
But in order to get the whole saga, you're going to want to play all six episodes. I'm going to release the first one for free, either on, at the time, bulletin board systems. College bookstores used to keep, you know, they'd charge a couple of bucks for shareware if you didn't have access to pre-internet sharing technology or stuff like that. But they would release them for free. Go download, play. Here's the first episode. And it's a complete game. You know, you play through 12 levels, and if you liked it, you could buy the rest of the episodes and get them. Usually in a decent box on disc with a little manual and some extra stuff. And shareware was huge. For the longest time, I only played the first level of Duke Nukem 1 and the first level of Duke Nukem 2 because I didn't have the other episodes. Luckily, enter the internet and modern technology, and I can get them now for free and play them. Or if I decide to play a little bit to, say, like Good Old Games or something like that, then I can get them legally and have some nice extras with them. That is something that you never ever saw on consoles. There was a similar thing of, hey, can I borrow your Nintendo cartridge and then return it when I'm done?
You kind of have that now with like Xbox Live. You're able to get the first level for free, and then if you know play it completely through, everything unlocked, and then if you like it, buy more. So they do that now.
A playable demo.
Yeah,
is basically what that is.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm 50-50 on that.
Yeah.
Because to me, if I like it, then I've got to, when I do buy it, I have to redo this whole level because it can't save. So it's kind of irking.
But at the same time, when it comes to Xbox, you're still paying for that if you're an Xbox Live member.
No, I have Xbox Live free. You get that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
That part you get for free. Yeah. I won't pay for that shit.
Okay. But you know, you've got stuff like that. It's not bad. And they've kind of got that now. You're right. But PCs, this has been around for as long as I can remember.
Well, and then you also had, I'm not saying pre-internet because that's not the right way to put it, but pre-easy connectivity. Yes, you could have three or four people playing a Mario Kart game, you know,
gathered around the screen.
Right. Yes. You know, in one room. Hell, even remember there was that four-player option on Nightmare on Elm Street on the NES. For some reason, they thought four people would want to play this at one time.
Well, there was a four-player option on Mario Kart if you had the little splitter box.
Yeah, but this was at regular NES, so this was earlier. It's like, yeah, because four people are going to play that piece of shit. But PC, you had like the LAN parties, and you could have everybody playing Quake and Doom and shit in these giant rooms all hooked up. You know, scary German kid freaking out and breaking his keyboard like on YouTube.
So be it.
You know, that to me was both a boon and a bane. Because, yes, you got to play with other people, but then that brought up the oft complaint of online gaming, the other assholes you have to deal with. So to me, boon and bane at the same time.
Well, I mean, at least at a LAN party or a little bit, you know, post LAN party when they started opening cyber cafes, you were there and the other asshole was at the other end of the room. So you could go and
punch
and yell at him. Exactly. Or, you know, face to face, it's a whole lot.
They're not going to call you a nigger faggot
exactly
as quickly when you're in the same room.
You are not nearly going to find out who your mother has been sleeping with as quickly if they're in the same room. And that's, That's online gaming, and that's a problem of immaturity.
But I think that leads into our next PC thing, which is what I called them PC Nazis. You called it the PC Master.
The glorious PC Master Race.
I have met people that are like, I will not play a game on a console. I won't lower myself to play a game on a console. He's like, the person I'm thinking of is like, consoles are for babies. He said, a real gamer would play on a fucking computer.
And I hate that shit.
I cannot stand. That is arrogance that is just sickening to me.
I hate the term.
I hate the term real gamer.
Yeah, I hate the term real gamer in general. And I hate people that think like that, because to me, if a game is fun, if it's enjoyable, I don't care if it's a board game. I don't care if it's
Fruit Ninja. Is it Fruit Ninja?
Fruit Ninja.
It is Fruit Ninja. Okay. You know, if you're playing that, fine. You're playing a game. Yeah. Fine.
I was going to say, I found great fun games on iOS, and I have a great time doing that. I have some really fun games on my Xbox that I play that I have a lot of fun with. I have a lot of fun on my PC. However, I do want to talk about the renaissance of PC gaming and the fact that starting at about 2009, it's starting to make a comeback. And that's due in large part to a couple of game sources. One, I mentioned it earlier, good old games. People's nostalgia are kicking in. You can find the games legally available on good old games, and there's a lot of help to get these classic games running on modern systems. One of my favorite LucasArts games in the world, Grim Fandango. Getting it running on a Windows 7 PC is an exercise in frustration.
I have a couple of Nintendo games on PC. You know, they're on disc, they're official, they're not bootlegs. It's like Castlevania 1, 2, and 3 and Contra and Super Contra. And I tried to get that running, Scott. And because it's made for, I think, Windows 98, maybe 2000. And it's just like everyone keeps, well, you know, this will do it. You got to do it. It's like I should not have to go through all these steps to make a game that was designed for my computer to fucking play on my computer.
It wasn't designed for your computer, though.
Well, it was designed for Windows.
It wasn't designed for your computer, though. It was designed with a completely different computer in mind. Of course you have to go through things. I have to go through DOSBox for a lot of my computer's games just to slow down my processor and let it run on what it thinks is a computer that it was designed for.
But wouldn't you think that as the like, say, you know, we're now at Windows 7, because both of us say fuck Windows 8, but that it would be arguably backwards compatible because the Windows 2000 game would take less resources, so it should be in there? Or am
no.
I? Okay.
Because when you talk about backwards compatibility, you have to take into effect clock speed. You have to take into effect that it is talking to a graphics card. It's talking to a sound card. It's doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes that you don't think about. And so it's got, in order for everything to be backwards compatible, it has to change everything. And like I said, fool the program into thinking that it's on a different program. However, I really wish you would let me finish thoughts before you asked. What I'm saying is, with good old games, they have a lot of things that will enable that to happen. And then the other company that I was talking about that has really brought about a huge renaissance of PC gaming is Steam and Valve Software, which
I hear a lot about. I actually think Steam advertises on Geek Juice.
They do. I'm pretty sure they do.
Yeah.
And there's a, in fact, I can tell you that we mentioned it a while back, and you can go through Geek Juice if you're going to order something on Steam. And Geek Juice gets a bit of cash.
Yeah, I can't remember the process.
Yes,
but yeah.
But that is huge for getting older programs. Another LucasArts game that I really love is called The Dig. It's a great story. It's a point-and-click adventure. And I have it on disk. And just plopping that disk into my computer's like, buh? Because it was designed for an old DOS box. And with Steam, I can get that classic game up and running without a problem. Also, Steam is a great outlet for a lot of indie publishers, independent publishers today, which normally, you know, prior to Steam would not have an easy distribution channel.
So does Steam then make your computer play the game, or do you still have to then work outside of it?
Ew, I'll show you.
Because I own the originals for remember Elvira had those right. adventure games?
Okay. No,
I'd love to play those.
You're confused. I bought the Dig through Steam. This is available in the Steam library.
How would I be able to find and play like those old Elvira games? Would I have to find an emulator probably? Or is there a service that would basically port those?
Were they built for DOS computer or were they built for early Windows?
Think DOS. Okay. They're on the little floppies. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't opened that box in a long time.
Then what you would need is it's not really an emulator. It is an emulator. It's hard to explain, but one that you could use is called DOSBox. And what it does is it gives you a DOS operating system environment for that computer to run. And slows down your clock speed and
but I would have to find a drive for these.
That's
what I mean. Is there a program out there that has like copied all the files where I can pay $5 to have all this as playable on my computer, like already in a DOS box?
Probably
or something?
Not.
Damn it.
Probably not. I mean, that's what I'm saying is with the Dig, this is one that LucasArts gave the rights to Steam to distribute and play with, and so it's a matter of double clicking and boom, it's up and running.
Okay.
There's Dust, by the way. That's a nice game. Anyway, that's what you can do with a lot of these old classic games, and that's why we're seeing a lot of new indie games and old games come back through Steam. And a lot of stuff, simply because it's a store. It's your game library. If I sell this computer and wipe the drives and sell it to somebody and buy a new mega jet powered huge machine and put it in and I go, okay, I want all my old games on my ones on Steam. All I have to do is install Steam and it goes, okay, you owned all these games. And we'll download all the software and install it all you want. And so it's made it a whole lot easier than it used to be.
Well, I've got a question then. He's setting his mic down because he's playing with playing with the Steam thing. That the whole concept of lost games. Because one of the things that I noticed about PC games is when I look through some of the old catalogs or I see an ad in an old magazine, that these things came out. And then they were never ported anywhere else again.
Right.
And that's what I'm kind of pointing out with like those two Elvira games, which were award-winning games.
Which are probably abandonware at this point.
Right. So what are those all these games just lost to time then? Or does somebody have to take all the effort to find them, transfer them, and do everything I talked about? I mean, that's one of the things with PC games, especially licenses. I know there are Doctor Who games that came out on PC that nobody has seen since 1983 and all this. And there seems to be more lost games on PC than there is on consoles.
Well, the reason for that...
lost in quotes.
Okay, the reason for that is because publishers come along and they publish their games that they want and that they love. And it goes and maybe it's a commercial failure and they go out of business. So long as you have the code, you can get it running on a PC. Without a problem. We've got the information on the discs. If, like I've offered before, we'll go and we'll pick up a little floppy drive, a USB floppy drive, and we'll see if we can't get it running on this PC, which I can, through DOSBox and stuff like that. But
I'm going to have to bring one of those Elvira ones over here and we'll
try that. It takes a little bit of a labor of love, but it's out there. And Steam distributes a lot of them. Good old games has tons of them, so long as you can get the information, you've got the game. And abandonware, by the way, is when exactly what I said, a publisher comes along, puts out the game, supports it for a while, and then it's gone.
Because I don't think that would transfer it into the public domain where anybody could, take it because you'd still have trademark issues.
No, you still
licensing.
Have For instance,
which one are you looking at?
I'm looking at the LucasArts library. We've got Loom. Loom is a decent little game. It's an old classic LucasArts adventure.
Looks early graphical 90s.
Adventure. Oh no. This really? Was late 80s. This was one of their first. And does LucasArts support Loom? Well, no, LucasArts is gone. Did they support Loom while they were still around? For a while, not so much. Steam has kind of taken it up where they could, and you can now play it. Unfortunately, the one that Steam doesn't have that I wish they did was the motorcycle one.
I don't
know. I know you don't know. I'll think of it as soon as we're done recording, but...
Of course you will.
You know, yes, you're right. Just like there are people who play Xbox who wouldn't lower themselves to play PlayStation. There are a lot of people who are looking at the current modern generation of game consoles, let's say 360 and on, who wouldn't lower themselves to play an Atari 2600.
Is that something?
There are assholes in every single channel of life.
But the PC Nazis seem to be so vocal and so hardcore, I almost think mental illness, because it's like, you people are almost racist against consoles, you know?
And then they grow up. There are assholes in every channel of life, and if somebody is that passionate about a PC... and that passionate about PC gaming, of, you know, I love PC gaming. I'm glad.
I know you do. He's got on the floor here this fucking thick as shit.
I call it my big book of software.
Yeah, it's just all these discs for these various games he's just got sitting here on the floor.
And you'll notice that I've got spindles of other discs that I haven't put into the big book of software You know, I love PC gaming, and it's a passion for me, and getting classic games running on modern PCs and modern PC games. I prefer games on the PC, but at the same time, am I lowering myself? No, I'm playing a game through a different channel.
I think you and I just grew up different. I grew up playing consoles. You grew up playing a computer. So I'm more used to the console. You're more used to the computer. But I also want to talk a little bit about... Now, you and I had different terms for this. I call them time wasters. Stuff like Bejeweled,
casual
Luxor,
games.
Plants vs. Zombies. Yeah, you call them casual. I'll call them time wasters because that's what they are to me.
You call them time wasters. I go by the industry standard and what the industry calls them, casual gaming.
The reason I call them time wasters is... Well, you know, I got to record a Geek Juice in 10 minutes. I got nothing else to do. Let's blow some zombies' heads off with some pea shooters. Okay, you know, it's 10 minutes, quick, done, in, out. To me, time waster game. Is that PC gaming, or is that just goofing off for 10 minutes?
It's casual gaming. Peggle. Peggle can be played on...
I don't know what that is.
It's a game.
Well, obviously.
And I'll show it to you. But it can be played on PC. It can be played on Xbox. It can be played on iOS. It can be played on the web, for God's sake. And so you say, is that PC gaming? Well, are they playing on a PC?
But you have...
You know, it,
normally when you think PC gaming, you're thinking of something that you could only play on the PC.
Not me. No. No. PC gaming is playing on the PC, period. And if it's, I don't care if it's a web game, if you're playing on the PC, guess what? You're PC gaming. And I don't understand that, because Bioshock, a great game that I can play on my PC and it looks absolutely glorious and it's wonderful. I can go up to my Xbox and I can play it and it looks good and not quite as good as it does on the PC, but that's the nature of the hardware.
And see, to me, PC gaming... is the stuff I can't do on a console, or in console gaming would be the stuff that, you know, is not like on a PC, on a computer port.
And I got to be honest, it's those terms are outdated and fading away, because more and more, if you've got a AAA title and if you're Electronic Arts or if you're some other big company and you say, I want to put together a game and make money from it, you better damn well release it on consoles and PC.
It wasn't always like that, though.
No, it wasn't always.
Back in the 90s, you had your PC games and your console games, yes, and they rarely crossed paths.
That's right.
Occasionally they did, but rarely did they cross paths.
Right. And you know, one that I'm looking forward to picking up on PC is Grand Theft Auto V. Hasn't been released for PC yet, but it will be. And it will most likely look better, and because I've got a decent battle station, it'll run a little bit in the more nicely. But nowadays, do you know what consoles are now? They're specialized, stripped-down PCs. I hate to tell you this, people, but that's what they are. They are PCs. They're just stripped down and specialized to do one thing and one thing well, unless you're the Xbox One where you're trying to do everything and Microsoft really fucked up with that one. But,
well, I mean, you know, that's been obvious for a long time because on my Xbox, I can look at YouTube and Netflix and watch movie trailers and buy movies and music. And, you know, it's been like that. I don't think the PS2 or the Xbox.
No, they didn't.
Not so much. So, yeah, they've been essentially the same thing. Just, and again, going the opposite direction, it's far more awkward to find something on YouTube on your Xbox than it is on your computer.
Right. Especially if you don't have a keyboard for the Xbox.
Oh, that one letter and moving the. Oh, my God, is that fucking hell?
Yes.
But to me, that's what PC game in my head will always be. PC is where you play the stuff you can't play on the consoles. Right or wrong, that's how my head looks at it. So right or wrong, that's where it goes.
Okay. Also, you know, I mentioned independent publishing companies and independent game companies. The PC has been a real boon for them because if it makes waves in the PC, it's probably going to find its way to the console online stuff.
Well, that's where most of the indie development is happening, is computer games.
Yes.
You know, because you don't have to have a license to be on the computer. You do for the Xbox and the PlayStation and all that. So that's where the innovation is coming in, really, when you think about it, Scott.
And Steam, once again, is another great outlet with Greenlight.
I don't know what that is.
Of course you don't. Greenlight is basically their... Hey, here are games that people are making. Vote on who makes them. You know, does this sound like a good game to you?
Oh, okay.
And that kind of stuff. And that's what they are.
Okay. So to me, PC, you know, it has its place. I think it played a large part in the console wars because it was constantly pushing things. And I'm saying that in a good way. It was pushing the consoles to go, hey, better graphics, better sound, longer gameplay. And eventually, I think the consoles caught up relatively.
I don't think the consoles will ever catch the PC because the PC is where the hardware development gets into the market first. I have the ability to upgrade my graphics cards with my PC versus Xbox 360 has to release a new console. And so you're right in the hardware that finds its way into PCs will always push hardware in consoles.
Do they kind of feed off of each other?
No, not really. I mean, I guess where PC feeds off of console is if a game is console exclusive, and it does really, really well, it's much more likely that it's going to find a port to the PC than it is to the other consoles.
Yeah.
Depending, unless it's done by Naughty Dog, then it comes out for the PlayStation, and that's it.
I don't know who Naughty Dog is.
I know, so. Of course you don't.
What? What? Are we going to start a drinking game with you saying that?
We might.
What?
But that's... A lot of this stuff and, you know, companies like Infogrames and stuff, I think you're going to find your gameplay and your game innovation on PC. You're going to find your hardware innovation on PC. And all of this stuff is going to come around long before it hits consoles.
Well, I think there's also less industrialization
considerably
on the computer than there is. Because, you know, you've got to deal with Microsoft and Sony for Nintendo. Right.
And I know that Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo all have their outlets for indie gamers, but we'll touch on that in the future. I want to do another episode on this, but we're
out of
time.
Told you, I was going to be asking stupid questions.
That's okay. We're out of time. Thank you a lot for joining us, everybody, and we will see you next week, and we'll finish this up at some point, promise. Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.